There.
Oh, what up?
How's your day?
Have too many animals. Also, so you realize distinctly that you have too many animals in your house whenever it storms because you're just like,
Just trapped with your animals.
yes. And you're like, this is fine when I can like go outside. But right now they're just like ever present. And they produce, I guess this is what people with kids still they just produce so much liquids and things, and they require so much liquids and things, and it just makes you contemplate the futility of life.
And I don't know if yours are like this, but Penny just never stops touching me. It's like,
Salem is like that with me. Well, clearly the dog, I mean the dogs are always, isn't that kind of what dogs do? I don't know.
dogs, but I feel like some dogs are especially Velcro-like, and Penny is high on that one. She needs to be touching me all of the time, which
Yeah,
is
like
typically fine if I can get out of the house for a
we
minute.
joke that like Penny and Salem would like just become one with us if it was possible.
If there was a surgery that would attach her to my body or Salem to Leah's, that both of these animals would immediately sign on for
And
that.
they're both incredibly anxious.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's part, I think maybe we just solved it. We should be vets.
I think we've discovered why.
Oh gosh, we should be vets. Because Zero, who is never really anxious, because I don't think that he runs that way,
No.
he likes to be around me, but like if the opportunity is there to run, then I no longer exist anymore. So, I mean. But hey guys, welcome to Theology on the Rocks, where we have animals. It's
Welcome
actually
to the hurricane edition of Theology on
where
the
everyone on the East Coast is either sad, underwater, sorry to you guys that had that storm surge, or like me, who just gets the like, I don't want to say it's the crappy end because that sounds like disingenuous, but it's just sort of like the,
It's
oh
like
yeah.
you
It's
have
very,
like
it's like the pitter patter end, but it like, but it's really consistent. Like Charlotte is just like, it just rains, but like not hurricane rain, not hurricane wind, thank God,
just a lot of rain.
just for days,
To be
just for days.
fair, that's really what we got here in St. Pete. It's a lot of rain and some wind, but like not enough for it to feel like a hurricane. It's just enough to be like, I can't consistently go outside. And my
Right.
dog doesn't want to go to the bathroom.
That's a big part. That was a big adjustment from cats to dogs, is the sheer uselessness of the dogs when they have to go to the bathroom.
They're
Is
like,
like they're
oh
like, oh
no.
gosh, I couldn't pause. The cats are like, there's a sand pit. It'll do. Like dogs are like,
Last
oh.
night, because Penny's really bad at getting distracted, and so if something distracts her, she's just not going to go to the bathroom at all. Also, this is the second week in a row we've talked about our animals going to the bathroom, but it's fine.
You know what? I'm pretty sure our names are on this podcast.
It just occurred to me this is such a consistent
Okay, well,
conversation.
I'm gonna start assembling this thing that we're making, but I want to hear about your Penny story. Tell me.
Oh, so I took her outside last night for like one last potty break before what I assumed was going to be a much more intense storm, and
Yeah.
just really wasn't where I am. It was in other places, but not so much where I am. But it was raining a bit, not like heavy, not uncomfortably so. But there were also people in the pool because Florida.
What in the world were they doing in the
They
pool?
were playing. Like it was like
In the middle of a start of a
at
hurricane?
the
I
start of the
mean,
hurricane.
that's
And
a,
like
ow, I just hit myself in the face. Talking to you and opening a bottle of Jura. That's wild.
so she could not
She
focus.
did,
Like
I mean, quite right. I
she
don't think I
was
would
so
either.
upset about the people being in the pool. Nothing else was existing. Everything was just about the people in the pool. And so she didn't go to the bathroom. We didn't have a final successful potty break,
Oh, I know.
which
Before it all started,
before it all
wow.
started, I was just like, well, sorry.
She's also very small.
She is
not very that small. Not that we are sizest on this podcast.
No.
But I'm hoping it takes her longer to do that.
I mean, she can hold it for a decent bit. So that's a plus in that. But yeah, so the hurricane was deeply uneventful here. All of our well wishes to the people who it did impact, but it was
for sure. I have a deep sympathy for that. Growing up here in Washington, I always lived slightly adjacent to the main action and was very grateful for that. Sucks.
It does suck. I mean, really grateful it wasn't as bad as Ian was last year, which was my first foray into Florida hurricanes. But I don't know. It stresses me out so much. And I don't even, own property.
Well, it's the loss of, I won't say anything about its academics, but the loss of control is not necessarily our strong point.
Yeah.
And I don't know that there's a more loss of control than a natural disaster. Oh, so,
yeah. And even with, I saw somebody joked on the interwebs somewhere that waiting for a hurricane is like being stalked by a turtle, because it is really slow.
Yeah.
you're just waiting for days to see how bad it's going to be. And like, you do some prepping, but I did some prepping. I did too much prepping because I'm still actually from Colorado. So
Christy told me all the things she was doing. She's like, I can't fill up my bathtub because I don't have a stopper. So I filled up a garbage can. I filled up
a trash can.
And I was like, with water. And I was like, what are you doing? I don't know. Like, I don't. And she explained the toilet later, but I was like, well, we've talked about this actually the last hurricane, where I was just like total like redneck about it. I was like, I don't know what you're doing right now. I've never done that.
It's so funny because Leah is so unfazed by all of it. And I am like just trying to figure out what the best plan is. But then Stuart will text me and be like, are you okay?
Yeah. Oh, did he? Aww.
He does, yeah.
Bless his heart. Yeah. Well, he's Scottish. So
I know. So it's like he's like well aware of how much I'm freaking out.
We went to the beach this weekend and I was like, basically like casually, if you hear things crashing in the background, just ignore them. they are what you're envisioning.
It's an intensive drink that we made. I'm proud of
already put two shots of whiskey, and good Lord, I'm getting rid of this freaking sweet wine. Thank God. Finally. It's still here. It's still here. We went to the beach and I would just say things like, I really want a beach house. I'd just be like, could we just like get it? Could we just like do that? And he was like giving me like degrees from the storm surge. He's like, well, you could probably be okay if you were like this far back. And I was just like, no, I want to be like on the beach though. And he's like,
he also texted and said, aren't you glad you don't own a beach house right now? And I was like, yep.
Oh, the treachery. Treachery. He's trying to get you to convince me to not get a beach house. This is why you can't let your other halves be friends with your friends, because then they start working against
you. I knew too. I was like, he's gonna show this to Leah later.
Oh my gosh. No, he didn't. See, he's gonna keep it in the archive, and then when I get real serious about it, he will present it to me by saying, Christy thinks it's a bad idea.
Christy thinks it's a bad idea. In a few months, when I've forgotten about the hurricane and I'm back on my we need a beach house kick, I'll have forgotten and I'll be like, I never said that.
You'd get correct. But until then, children, will everyone just shut up? Everybody quiet. I'm yelling at a cat that can't hear anything. We have signs for some things and we need a sign for shut the heck up. We haven't got there yet.
You need to teach him the sign for quiet. I don't know what.
Oh my God.
My friends that teach elementary school use like a little wolf. Quiet Coyote. Oh, like, that's it.
Oh, yeah.
Quiet Coyote. Yeah. But I think
to be that's fair, I use a little squiggle finger to tell him I love him, and he just stares at me with dead eyes. So I'm not sure that
how effective it is.
I think you have to be a willing participant in language exchange, and I'm not sure that
Beethoven. I'm not sure that he cares about communication in your ways. He cares about his own communication,
which is in his head, and sadly, everyone else has to hear. So, guys, this is Animals on the Rocks. We're making the Glorious Steinem today, which is a mixture of a lot of intense things.
But
Chrissy, I'm going to go ahead and tell you.
Yeah.
And you know by what I showed you in my lineup what I'm about to tell you. I'm not gonna do that egg.
You skipped that egg, didn't you? So
this is
supposed to be whiskey, Scottish whiskey.
Got that part.
Lemon juice, which got that. I don't own, so I have lime juice in mine, which...
You don't have a fancy Harris Teeter.
It's
like,
fine. and then simple syrup.
Got that. I made it
myself. And egg white. You're supposed to put an egg white in it. And then...
I'm not going to do that.
A floater of red wine. I did put the egg white in mine, but I have to tell you, it was a little bit of a moment. And then I thought to myself, Leah's going to skip this egg.
I am. And here's the deal. When you get to be 40, which is what I am, you sort of feel okay with telling people no. It's a glorious thing. Like, peer pressure no longer exists, really, for most people. And so I'm going to say no to that egg.
Do you not want eggs in your drinks, or did you just not want to bother with it?
I have an egg. I have multiple eggs. I can do the egg. I think it sounds terrible with Scottish whiskey and red wine.
I mean,
I think that sounds insane.
We'll taste our drinks and we'll see whose is better.
Okay, well, actually, can you tell me the percentage of the only two things I haven't put in here are the lemon juice and the simple syrup? If you have
it's a shot of each.
What was half of a shot? Because I just did a shot.
The egg.
Yeah, that's fine then. That can stay in that little hellhole. Okay. Hold on. I gotta do my lemon. Gotta do my lemon.
Technically it's also half a shot of the red wine, but I
did it. I put a full one in there.
Yeah.
Oh no.
You're supposed to pour the red wine in over a spoon.
I did that, Christy. Don't worry.
No, I tried that and it went all over my counter. I did it again without the spoon. So I don't know what that spoon nonsense is about.
I think that's fair. Okay, I'm almost done. On to the simple syrup. This is probably doing it in real time. A lot of pressure.
It is pretty, though. Like, I was impressed that it looks nice, given I made it and not a bartender.
There's a little bit of lemon juice left. So the Gloria Steinem, we got it from that book that we got the Beyonce book from. Yep. And I actually was like thinking, if you don't know much about Gloria Steinem, there is a fantastic drunk history that does about when she infiltrated the Playboy Bunny Club.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
I'm going to have to watch. Drunk History is the greatest thing.
It is. I can't like confirm the accuracy, but like watching it is really fun.
Watching it is always fun. I don't really care so much about the accuracy.
I don't either. I'm like, oh, she probably did that. But so she apparently, again, based on this drunk history, wrote a article about kind of exposed like the early Playboy clubs.
Yeah.
And like just how... I mean, it's not surprising in like the Me Too era, but I think in probably like the 70s or 60s, it was pretty. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how it could be surprising. That just seems like an obvious, but
it does. But I guess
maybe like, that's our millennial brain. Well, because it was
these high end clubs, but like, so like, I guess back in the day, it's like, you know, post war, it's just like the men did what the men did. And
yeah,
you didn't really. Oh my gosh. Inside voices, children. You didn't really ask too many questions, but I had this quote from her, which actually So if any of you have studied feminist theory, you know Judith Butler is a huge sort of figure in that world. Mm-hmm. She actually criticized Judith Butler at one stage, but she was actually more criticizing the tenure system and how actually women playing in. And if you don't know what tenure is, it's basically like this sort of old school system that really is becoming increasingly
rare,
but also there, like, it doesn't really, back in the day, it was a system whereby it was academic freedom. Like, academics could write what they wanted without being fired. So it's like almost like a guarantee in your contract. Now, tenure systems, they'll write something in that says, like, if the department shuts down, or if we get in financial distress. So essentially, they undermine all of it because they could just
fire. Well, and there are also, I've heard of many 10-year contracts that also even have some kinds of clauses about it obviously the legalese around it and stuff is not going to be this straightforward, but it's like, if you do something we don't like, we can still get rid of you. So the point of tenure has kind of gone away.
It has. And you know, I sort of, I question, yeah. And we are seeing it increasingly with the education stuff that's going on just all around the country, is that if someone decides to oust just like an entire department, if the board of trustees decides they want to do that, then they can, you know? Yeah. And so that was sort of the point of tenure to begin with, was so that stuff wouldn't happen. And now it's still happening. So Gloria Steinem criticizes the system because she said that actually feminist writers shouldn't be writing in this is my practical theologian thing, but she said they shouldn't be writing in the abstract, and that actually tenure has taught feminists to write in this way so that they can get tenure and be like, quote, the boys, and that actually the key to feminist writing is to write in the concrete, essentially.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, she said, this is what she said, nobody cares about feminist academic writing. That's careerism. These poor women in academia have to talk this silly language that nobody can understand in order to be accepted. But I recognize the fact that we have this ridiculous system of tenure, that the whole thrust of academia is one that values education, in my opinion, an inverse ratio to its usefulness. And what you write in inverse relationship to its understandability. And so then she criticizes Judith Butler, saying, I always wanted to put a sign on the road to Yale saying, beware, deconstruction ahead. Academics are forced to write language no one can understand so that they get tenure.
I mean, that is accurate.
It is. It's rough.
It's a statement. I have a whole bunch of thoughts about it. Because I don't think that theory is something we should stop doing.
No.
But I do understand what she means in saying, like, we're only doing it to be part of the Boyd's Club. Because I would say a lot of people I know wrote their first books with that intention of, like, I have to prove my chops. I have to be, like, I have to show, like, use all the fancy words and do all the like theoretical stuff, and then I can go do the things I actually want to do after I do that first thing. And I do think that's a bit silly.
That was her next thing. She said they have to, talking about these people going to get tenure, they have to say discourse, not talk. Yeah. Knowledge that is not accessible is not helpful.
Yeah.
It becomes aerialized, and I think it's important that a woman's experience be given a narrative.
I also think that even if we're writing theory, you can do it in a way that's accessible if you just
for sure.
Some of the stupid language.
For sure. Like, I always tell people I write and I don't write. I write like a practical theologian. But what I mean by that is I write like the most non-artistic person in the world. And I'm kind of okay because I really just want some people to get my ideas, you know, like.
Yeah.
There are some people who write beautifully, and I want to read them.
Yeah.
On the beach, specifically. And I want to, like, fall in love with their stories. But, like, I know that I'm not one of those. But I also know that, you know, it's easier sometimes to get across a message if you're
being. I mean, there are some books that I've read that have been incredibly powerful and had amazing things to put forward. And at the same time, and we're both very smart people. I am not somebody who usually struggles with reading, but there have been a couple of times that I've had to read books multiple times just to understand what's going on, because it is behind such academic language and you're thinking the whole time, you could have written this in a way that people would read it.
Remember, I wanted to do my master's dissertation on Mircea Eliade, who wrote about creation stories and like sort of comparative narratives and religions. And I started reading one of his books and I was making like flowcharts. Yeah. And I was like, I want to use you because you said some things in snippets that I thought were like mind blowing.
Yeah.
But like when I start to read your book, I don't understand any of it. And I realized people have chosen the snippets that are most accessible.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's, like I said, there's room for some of that stuff. There's room for some of that language, I think, but like snippets of it or have a way to access it better. It just seems so like we gatekeep these books through making them unreadable.
And I think that was her criticism from what I could read is like, I mean, and hers was a snippet as well. So there we go.
Yeah.
I'm a hypocrite, but it's like,
no, I mean, we're not going to read a whole book on the podcast.
Would you guys like me to? It's story time with Lee.
It's story time. We're just going to sit here and read Gloria Steinem to you.
I'll adopt this voice if it helps.
it's so soothing.
It does. I know. It doesn't creep you out. I'm going to get way more Southern the more I drink, and I apologize.
Speaking of drinking, are you ready?
Oh, I totally am, yeah.
Okay.
One last thing I did want to say. Yeah. Well, I've lost it now, and I haven't started drinking. It was something about the language. No, I do think the theory, like I've gotten a lot of places with theory. I just think it can become so dense. And the criticism I would have, having worked in a theology department, well, multiple ones, is there sort of that hierarchy of like, well, are you doing something that no one can read and is completely like, and I don't want to put it only in abstraction, like people who do systematics, I make fun of them, or people who do philosophical stuff. But I think it's easier to make abstract things difficult to read.
It is.
So I think that, because I've read some people who do things that are abstracted that are really quite accessible. So it is possible.
It is
like,
possible.
Like your stuff, I'm going to call out Christy Whaley here if you want an example of that. Like you do, not all of your, of course you do trauma and like it's grounded, but a lot of your like theory stuff I would read and I would be like, wow, that's a lot. Let me think about that. But like it was there, you know, and I think it was a good example of how you can do it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I do think that learning from people who write in more of a practical theology space, like Heather, helped with that a lot, because my desire to be more obtuse had gone away.
We'll just throw in an example. All you philosophical guys, systematic, just throw in an example. You know what gets me sometimes the most, and you would think that it would be very practical? Spirituality.
Oh, I know.
When people start doing like spirituality stuff, one of my good friends and colleague, Heidi Miller, is really proficient at spirituality. But when she starts talking, I'm like, my brain floats out of my head. What is happening? And it's funny because spirituality is very practical, but also very abstract at the same time. So I think it's a fascinating subject that I never want to do. But good for you guys who are doing it, because I do think it's like the combo of those worlds, because you're talking about this like behind the scenes stuff, but then also you're like talking about humans.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's drink.
Well, anyway, cheers.
I'm talking to like Gloria Steinem. Here's Gloria Steinem. I hope your egg's okay.
I would say.
Oh gosh, that's strong.
This is very strong. The wine being on the top is like all I can currently taste.
So well,
I don't even know what the rest of it tastes like at the moment, but
it tastes like heartburn, I can tell you.
It tastes like heartburn. Oh, I almost
all I can smell is the scotch right now. So like when I come in,
it is good though. I think all the egg really did was make it a bit frothier.
Was there two shots of scotch, right?
Yes, two shots of scotch.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. This is giving me, as the kids say, giving me very scotch right now.
It is giving scotch. Mm. It is. I don't know that I'd make it again, but it's not a terrible drink. I'm not mad.
It's not a terrible drink. I could. It would. It fits the hurricane adjacent party.
It does.
You kind of need to be inside drinking it.
That's what I felt. I was just having very cozy vibes today because we're trapped inside and it's, you know, not.
Have 8,000 and you have 8,000 animals in your house.
And you're, Leah, tell us about your new animal.
Oh dear Jesus. So
Leah's acquired a new animal.
Y'all keep in mind I have 3 cats and a dog who we've talked about extensively to varying degrees of psychosis. And the on the way home, there's a great meme. Well, I'll tell the meme after. But anyway, on the way home from the beach, I'm driving and I see that I need gas. So I stop at this gas station. And I should say the area between the beach in North Carolina and Charlotte is empty. Christy's
it is. There.
There's not a lot. There's not a lot happening.
Yeah.
And so I stopped at this. I saw a BP and I was like, oh God, I got to stop. So I stopped. And sorry, I just gave the brand away there. I don't support any gas stations. I wish my car was an EV, just so you know. But it's not. So I'm not rich enough yet for my beach house and my EV. So I stopped and I was pumping the gas. And my husband said, do you want something to drink? Because he's a Red Bull fiend. And so I said, I'll take a water because Red Bull makes me feel like I'm going to die, cry.
It makes me want to burst out of my skin.
And also build a house. And the idea of like driving 4 hours while drinking that sounds terrible to me. So anyway, there's my personality. So he goes in and he gets his 85,000 Red Bulls. And then he comes back out. And I will say it's on like a highway. So it's like on a busy road. And so I can't really hear anything. And he's like, I swear I just heard a meow. And in my heart of hearts, I just sank a little because I was like, oh no. And I'll tell you why. Because I said, where did you hear it? And he goes, in the garbage can. And I was like, okay. Uh-oh. So I look over, and as I look over, there is this little tiny, like could fit in my very small hands tag that is kitten, infant, I would say.
So tiny.
That is falling out of the garbage can.
Oh.
And is in the corner and these people are just walking by and like he's hissing backed up in the corner against the garbage can, like tiny, tiny with this little hiss. And with his paws out, like trying to make himself big.
Yeah.
So I go in to the, I see it and I'm like, grab it. And so I, and then he starts like, well, should I get it? You know, he's very British. He's like, should I get a towel? Should I, whatever. And I just like, Georgia just picked it up.
I was going to ask you if you got anything to protect your skin, but
no, it was it was so tiny that like,
I wouldn't have thought about it until much later.
Yeah, I guess I think about it. But I can't emphasize how tiny it was. Mm-hmm. Like, it was so small that it couldn't have done. I mean, maybe I say. But anyway, I took it in and I was just like, hey, like, there's a kitten. They were very country. And I was like, hey, there's a kitten in your garbage can. Anybody? When I'm trying to, like, get people to like me, it gets more Georgia. And I'm like, anybody in here have a cat? And there's these two people. And they were very lovely, I have to say. But they're just like, there's cats around here. What are you talking about? And then one of the people was like, we can put it out in the field.
Oh, no.
I think it was in a parking lot. So, I mean, it, you know.
I mean, but.
Maybe better, I guess. I don't know.
Barely.
I don't, but I just said, do you guys not want it? Like, could y'all not like take it or something? And like, you know, and the guy was like, no, I'm not taking it. He was very firm. And she was like, well, and I was like, okay. And then they're like, where do you live? And I was like, Charlotte. And they're like, oh, it's only an hour to Charlotte. You just go ahead. And the guy just kept saying, you got yourself a new kitten. And I was like, I've got three cats in my house right now. I was like, anyway, I got myself a new kitten, but it's not, it's, that's the summary of the story, is they gave me a chewing tobacco box and a towel, and oh. I put the cat in there, a tiny, tiny kitten. We'll put up a picture of him, but
yeah,
we called him Oscar after Oscar, Oscar the Grouch.
Because he found him in a trash can.
And then my friend sent me this meme that was like, a dog, you prepare to adopt a dog, you make your house ready, you get a fence. You send an application, and then the rescue picks you. Cats.
And they have to do home visits. And
you have to do home visits. Cats. You look in a garbage can.
You found it in a garbage can. Oh, but he's so cute. He's just
he's adorable. And he found the right people. Like, we've fostered cats before, so we'll get them big and strong. And but moral of the story, have your pets spayed or neutered.
Yes, have your pets spayed or neutered. Keep your and cats indoors.
Keep your cats indoors. Like, I'm a little bit of an evangelist about this. Like,
I, as am I. It is a ecological crisis to keep outdoor cats.
I looked it up.
I just read an article that there are, I think, two or three species of birds that have become extinct because of outdoor cats in New Zealand. Oh.
I mean, my cats have, we got Salem and Kylo so young that they've been bolted out the door. I mean, Beethoven would go anywhere and I would maybe feel guilty, but he's white and deaf.
Mm-hmm.
So like,
he wouldn't survive.
He came to us with a broken tail that has remained broken. Like, he didn't even survive like 3 weeks without maiming himself. Maybe. So I'm pretty sure that like.
So Spike screams, Leah.
He's just like, let me out. And I'm like, dude, you're not going to last out there. I don't know what to say. It's not going to go well. I'm also in the city. But like, yeah, it just, and we looked around a little bit, but like, there's no telling where it came from. I mean, it could have, the guy was like, it probably was up in an engine somewhere. And I was like, it's 100 degrees today. And I'm not sure. But like, whatever, it didn't matter. It's in a garbage can.
Well, he's safe.
Oscar is safe.
Anybody in Charlotte needs a kitten, Leah and Stuart have one for you.
He's super cute, and I'm already making him the most awesome cat ever. Yeah. He's already a lap cat. He already purrs. He makes this squeak noise when he goes to the bathroom, which is really endearing. And I got him to use the litter box in one day.
He's already trained, litter box trained. That's amazing.
He's boom. He's ready. I mean, he's not really ready, but he's. he's very tiny. Like,
he's very tiny.
I'm pretty sure Beethoven could eat him in one gulp. So he needs a little
bit. He's the only cat in your house that's smaller than my dog.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. For sure. Like, Penny would be like, I am the boss of this bitch.
Penny would be like, tiny animal. Mm-hmm. Tiny animals absolutely blow her mind. She does not know what to do with animals that are smaller than her. So it would be really exciting to watch.
I mean, I'm kind of baffled. Like, I don't know what to do if I can't just like scoot him like a vacuum cleaner out the door. Like, this guy would just like break in half. So all my cats are mighty. And my dogs,
they are
a nightmare. But anyway, so enough about that. Another cat. My point is, I got another cat. Christy survived the hurricane. I got another cat.
Yep. We've had a very eventful few days here.
I just wanted to go. It's funny because my husband and I are sort of opposite. Like, I'm really like, he was saying, oh my gosh, we can't leave him. We have to get him. You know, like that. And I just looked at him and I was like, just get the box. Get the box. And it's funny because what I will tell you, you might say, oh, Leah, like, that sounds like you're a monster. We were never going to leave that cat.
No, you weren't.
That cat was never going to. But what I do know is what that cat will require to get it to be able to leave my house.
Yeah.
And it will be an incredible amount of time and money and affection and all
that. You've got some work ahead of you with that little one.
Little trash cat.
Little trash cat.
But all Stuart saw was like, big old eyeballs and ears, and he was like, "Oh my god,
oh baby."
Well, and then like, and then later he was like, when we were just like silently driving home, I was like, he was like, "You know, I sometimes think I could buy you like a farm for all the like just an animal farm." And I was like, "Oh, so you're gonna buy me a farm, but not a beach house,
but not a beach house."
That's your penance for this cat and the chewing tobacco box.
Also, I like that he's like, "I could buy you a farm for your animals," as if he's not playing a role in the taking in of animals.
The Taylor Swift song, "Antihero," where she says, "I'm the problem, it's me."
Yeah.
That's Stewart's song about animals. "I'm the problem, it's me." This house would have nowhere to walk if it was up to him. You talk about the crazy cat ladies. Oh no,
he would I've got one more.
He would have every. He told me one time, he was like, "You know, I had like a frog." And I was like, I don't want to hear about it. Don't tell me about it.
You know, when I after I graduated seminary, I told somebody this, and it was not in jest. Like, I was kind of serious, but I had absolutely no idea how to even begin. But I was like, I either am going to do a PhD or I'm going to open a dog rescue.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
they seem like both equally good and practical tracks to go on for my life.
The longer things go, Christy, I'm not going to lie. If you want to, you know, co-share in this endeavor that Stewart has brought about.
Look, we can have Theology on the Rocks and a like animal rescue farm together.
TikToks.
We'll make TikToks.
There's a really funny TikTok, and I'll endorse this. I think it's at Useless Farm.
Mm-hmm.
And I love she has like all those like ostriches.
Yes. And Karen is constantly trying to attack her.
Karen wants to attack her all the time. And I love it because she's this like glammed out girl. She's gorgeous, and she just runs this useless farm. And that's exactly what I want. I want a completely useless farm.
It is. It's the dream, really.
Yeah. So, anyway, on that note, this is definitely working. This is what Christy and I talk about when we're together. I know some people fast forward through all the banter and podcasts, but you know what? This is what it's like to drink with us. Which, by the way, if you go to beer camp,
oh my god, yes. I meant to open the show with this information, and then I got distracted by this intense drink.
And Beethoven screaming like a
Beethoven baby. Screaming, and Penny was trying to eat her dinner. It was just a lot of animal stuff. Beer camp is coming up, and if you are listening to this on either August 30th, which is today, or August 31st. It is your last day to register for the lower price. On the September 1st, the price goes up. Either way, you can still use our code, which is RocksGodPod. But register quickly, because tickets are also headed towards selling out, and you don't want to miss out on Theology Beer Camp.
And also, I can't say we're in first place. So if you want to like do we're competing now code. Against what might be 3,500 podcasts.
It's us against the world, really.
It's us against the world. Support us
by using our code. And we have the link in our Instagram bio and our other social media bios, but also it's theologybeer.camp is the web address. If you want to just go straight there. And you can register. It's in Springfield, Missouri, October 19th through the 21st. And Leah, what song are you going to karaoke?
Well, we had several options, but I am not... Here's my problem. What immediately comes to mind is I'm not going to do Third Eye Blind, Semi-Charmed Kind of Life, which means everyone automatically says, well, you have to do that. And I just want to emphasize that I did it last year.
You've already done it. You have to do something different. It
was terrible. Yeah. We talked about doing Goodbye Earl, which is a good one. But then also the Ken song, which I think could also be good. Which Christy, as you know from last week, knows all the words to the Ken song.
Yes, I do.
I do not. But I would be willing to learn.
at least it's up there in front of you. You don't have to know them.
Oh, just, the internet. I forgot.
You just sing and read along.
Great. I think that could actually be pretty fun. So I would lean more towards that if we're doing one. Well, we're gonna do it together.
Obviously. I'm not doing it by myself.
I did Semi-Charm Kind of Life by myself.
I'm very proud of you, but that is not.
No, you shouldn't be.
I am not like a shy person. No one has ever accused me of that, but I do not want to get up in front of everyone and sing by myself. That's where I draw the line.
We have different versions of extroversion, I think. Yeah. Like you have more time, I think, for people. And like, yeah. I don't care as much about public persona. Clearly by that song.
I have very specific ways that I want to be the center of attention, and that is not one of those.
I just don't care anymore. I don't know what happened.
You hit 40 and you're like, fuck it.
I know. It may, probably the alcohol. I'm just like, whatever. This is fine. I mean, I'm not embarrassing any kids. Like, my cats aren't here. So. Yeah, we are going to that. And then we're going to be at AAR.
Yep. And then AAR is coming in San Antonio.
We're excited to get my cowboy hat ready.
We're going to get some margaritas.
Oof. Yes. But I have to do a panel at some stage.
You have to do a panel. I very purposely did not submit a paper.
Well, I did, but because of my track, I assumed I was also not going to be on a panel.
She has finally made it into the world of presenting at AAR, and
I'm excited to throw her
a party for it
with margaritas.
With margaritas, sure. It's gonna be great.
So those are our plugs for things happening.
Yeah.
Today is, if you can believe it, today is our 13th episode.
13th episode.
Feels like we've done something now. My question is, how do we move to season two?
Is this the end of season one? Are our seasons 13 episodes long? We could do that.
I mean, that's kind of cool. I like that.
Although I don't know if we're just going to have another episode next week and then it's...
Well, you just go season two. It's called the edit button. It's not really hard. So Christy reminded me that it was 13, and then she said we should do something spooky because, as you guys know, I'm just
basically a lover of the spooky.
Well, and I'm just waiting now. What do you do in August and September? Let's be honest.
You're just really waiting for October to hit so that the Halloween decorations can come out.
And then also it's like this weather, just a bunch of hurricanes and BS coming straight for you. And you're just like, oh, gosh.
Everybody's tired of being like sweltering hot. We're like, okay, it's time for yourself.
It can stay hot. I just don't want it to rain. I love the heat. I just want to be hot all the time.
She does. I like the hot. I just don't want to be humid, and I live in the wrong place for that. So
you do. That's right. Maybe the worst place in the United States, at least.
It truly is. It is the worst place for the humidity.
Because you could even go to like Death Valley and you'd be a little less humid.
I would be like, oh, this is fine. I can do this all day long.
Mm-hmm. So we thought we would do something like I've talked briefly about a couple of like scary movies that mm-hmm. were dealt with theology, but she said, let's do something spooky. And I was like, okay, horror movies, let's do that, which I have watched most of them.
Leah loves horror movies.
I don't like gore porn though. I don't do those. So like the Hostels and the Saws and all of that. Yeah. I don't need that's like Red Bull to me. I don't mind a good thing that could happen that I could worry about, like a natural disaster, like a shark situation.
Sharknado.
Like you know, whatever, I'll watch that. But like I don't need to see someone just being obscenely like argue some of these are like that, but like the whole point of those movies is just like torture. And yeah. I'm just not really into that. Yeah, but
no, we don't like that. But what is your favorite horror movie?
Of all time? Scream. The first Scream.
Oh, okay.
Sort of a controversial pick, I think, but I just remember when it came out, my mom was really big into scary stuff, so she would like keep me up and watch like Dateline at night, and I was just like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. But I was like younger, and so I just like love, and also Halloween was so huge in like the 90s at my house, and so it's just this holiday that like everyone there's currently this thing on TikTok that's trending that was this woman, and she's like an evangelical Christian, and I'm guessing this context clues,
but yeah,
she's holding a child and she's dressed up as like Dorothy, and like her kids dressed up as something I don't remember, but she was like, as Christians we don't celebrate Halloween, but we do dress up for the fun of it, and there's all these people who are stitching with it being like, that's Halloween.
I was like, what's the difference there?
We're doing Halloween, and she's standing on her porch and there's like stuff for Halloween. like are you just not giving out candy, so you're doing like the jerk Halloween?
you're just handing out Jesus tracks to people with candy. Everyone hates you.
But like everyone is stitching it being like, what are you talking so about confused.
I do think that there was a big like Scream. I remember when Scream came out, and it was like Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer, and
that was like a good
that kind of genre, and it was like Halloween and those kinds of movies were like a thing.
I do like the original Halloween. That one would be my second favorite, but like I think the feeling that I felt with Scream was like that it was so, because I'd watched the whole like back catalog of sort of classic horror, and it was so like self-referential. Mm-hmm. I Know What You Did Last Summer had it to some degree because Kevin Richardson and like Wes Craven doing these things, but like sense of like whenever he's doing the rules and he's like, you can't have sex, you can't drink alcohol, you can't like, don't say I'll be right back because you're not gonna be right. it was like all this stuff that we were just, I think for those people who really liked horror, it was funny enough but also scary enough, because like when I got out of that movie when I was, I think it came out like late 90s, and when I came out of the theater, uh-huh, I remember a guy had put on a Scream mask and was like running around.
I also parking lot. That being like a thing, people walking around with a Scream mask in various public places to scare people, which I saw somebody at the mall doing it, running around with masks.
Same. I think it was pre Columbine.
I was just gonna say I think it was before that was actually a very threatening thing to do, you know. The very different time for the United States. But
yeah, where I was just like, oh, who's that crazy person? Not like, I'm gonna duck. I need to get down on the ground.
Right. Should we duck and cover? Yeah. No, which man feels like such a different life, almost, you know.
The same mall that I went to, and almost in the same area, I went with my mom to get my wedding jewelry at the mall, as you do. And there was someone who set off firecrackers in a Victoria's Secret, like the pink store.
Yeah.
So this was in 2017. So fast forward about 20 years earlier, and all we see, we're standing at like one of those like counters that are right near the exit looking at jewelry, and all we see is this wave of people coming towards us, and it felt awful.
Yeah.
And we ran outside, and there was a guy that like tripped over a curb and he had a baby in his hand, and I remember looking around at that parking lot thinking, this is the same parking lot that I came out and was like giggling because someone had a green mask on.
Like, I mean, really major commentary on how quickly we have descended into a whole different kind of country, honestly.
And how we accept it.
And yeah, the acceptance, you know, of it. I'm
like, we hated it, but I mean, we weren't surprised by it. And it's like the idea that that wasn't surprising.
Yeah.
You know,
the fact that it's like part of our instincts now, if you hear a loud noise to run, rather than assuming that you're not going to die at the mall.
Right.
You know, I, right. Oh geez.
Like, I know people who don't go to the movies anymore. They don't mm-hmm. do like they're, I mean, and I will say this podcast is in light of the professor who got shot at UNC yes. Chapel Hill
yeah.
a couple of days ago. And I have great, deep sympathy for the family and all that.
Oh my
all
gosh.
That. And also just terrifying. You know,
it is terrifying. And too, as professors, both of us have had situations where we've had to be kind of vigilant about something,
mm-hmm.
wondering if we were going to be the next headline. And I know as professors, we're slightly less inundated with it than teachers who are doing K through 12 as well. And I mean, the fact that educators have to also be trained on what to do with active shooters is just terrible.
And I think in some way it is terrible. And I think in some ways it's why I liked some of the seasons, I should say, of American Horror Story, if you've ever watched that TV show. But what I appreciated about, especially, it was, so all of them have a different theme. And they were all right. kind of like super, like there was Coven that was witches, and there was Freak Show, which was like the circus and everything else. But it's based, all based very much in the American context. And then they did one that was called Cult. And the first scene of the TV show is a guy who becomes the main cult leader who's sitting on a on a couch watching Donald Trump win the election, and basically just starts going insane. Evan Peterson, who's a great actor, and
yeah.
he just starts jumping up and down and like pointing at all the people that were supporting, you know, Hillary or whatever, and just like clapping and was so excited. And again, Donald Trump supporters, I don't care, but it was just like that, it made it, it framed it so the American Horror Story was us.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't, there wasn't any supernatural elements really in that
yeah.
series. It was like, it's us.
Yeah. Which I think, so I went to, this is, oh gosh, probably 2014, maybe even 2013, I was at a regional AAR in the Rocky Mountain region. And one of the papers that was presented was on the theology of horror movies.
Mm.
And it was a really great paper. And I spoke with the presenter afterwards, and he had talked about the ways that horror movies give us a monster to fear,
mm-hmm.
But also how they kind of deal with a lot of like cultural, anthropological concepts of humanness and what it means to be human. And so what are the things that we can take away from a person to make them into the monster instead mm-hmm. of a human? And he related that to more theological discussions about like the Imago Dei or the image of God, and how, you know, we have to kind of wrestle with how we make people into monsters, which is a little bit of what I talk about in my thesis as well, is the concept of like, who do we view as monsters and stuff. And so he talked about Jason from, which is the one that Jason's in, the horror movie.
I'm going to make you guess.
Leah, I haven't seen them. Is it Friday the 13th?
Yes, it okay. is. Jason Voorhees, Camp Crystal Lake.
Jason is Friday the 13th, and Michael
is Halloween.
Myers is Halloween. Okay.
Yep. And who's in Nightmare on Elm Street?
Freddy
mm-hmm.
Krueger.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
100 on your test.
I have seen one of those movies, and I think it was Friday the 13th.
Yeah, those are classics.
Is that the one that's at camp?
Yeah, it's Camp Crystal
okay.
Lake.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a real sort of thing. They always, I will say the sequels, I'm going to let you finish your story, but the sequels are funny because like.
The sequels are never as good.
Well, they're not, but it's also like, just don't go to the freaking lake.
Yeah, stop going to the lake. Why would you go
back to the lake? Stop going to the camp.
My friends in high school knew that I'm a big wimp, and I like truly I can't watch a lot of things. I'm a little bit better than I used to be, but not much. And my friends in high school used to tell me that we were going to see a certain movie, and then it would actually be a horror movie. But like 10 minutes in, when I realized it would be too late, like now I have to finish it. So that was one of those times that I got tricked. But he talks a lot.
He's very slow. Like it's
it does feel like you could get away from some of these.
And again, just want to emphasize, he's always at Camp Crystal Lake. So
don't go there. This is also why I'm not afraid of zombies, is that I just really feel like it doesn't take a whole lot to get away from the zombies.
Well, This Is Us. Have you watched This Is Us? The new one with Pedro Pascal in it?
Oh, yeah, that's not This Is Us, though. What is that called?
This Is Us. That was the, like, loving The Last of Us.
Yes. I did watch it.
Those are faster. Those guys are a little bit faster.
They are a little bit faster. Zombie movies, though, I'm good. I think my ex got me, like, over the fear.
I'm glad you've gotten over that.
But anyway, he talked a lot about the kinds of things that you could, like, because his paper was specifically studying, I think, Jason from Friday the 13th, and the kinds of things that we kind of demonize in humans that he embodied. And they weren't even, like, monster characteristics. It was like he was a little bit introverted or something, like, very normal things, and the ways that we kind of make those less than human in order to get mad at people. But I do think that this is part of the problem with where our society is in terms of all of these shootings and stuff, is that we come up with reasons why it's an anomaly and why those people are monsters, but most of us are not monsters, instead of investigating what is gone on with all of us and saying, like, what are the things causing it? I mean, it's like 20 some years since Columbine. And it's just gotten much worse and more prevalent. And that's not actually a very long time. And so how quickly we've gotten into this place, you know, how we have made certain people monsters. I think it was a really interesting paper.
And I think that's when I said the stuff about AHS cult. I was like, he was looking at Trump, but you know what? And I think that's the thing, is like, don't give those people power.
Right.
Because they're not the, I mean, you can think he's a monster if you want. But like, the issue was that the people watching had stuff deep inside.
Yeah.
So the horror story is the public.
Yeah.
It's not like a, you know, that was the whole point of the season, is that it's not this one person. This one person just opened up this gateway of like, I hear you.
Yeah. The one person just really let people do the things that they were already doing, but more in public or out
in public. Right. Yeah. That's right. And there's been people like that throughout, you know, history. Like, and just read Bad Theology. There's a lot of them. There's a lot of them in there.
There's a lot of them. Yeah.
From the kind of creation of our country and onwards, the history, there's been these people who have in some ways allowed people's inner kind of, I would almost say selfishness, if you want it to be a little bit less, you know, subjective selfishness, rise to the surface and just take over kind of certain communities. And I think that's what certain political figures, not just this last one, but some of them have done. And I think that's what that show is about. And it's this idea of like, because there's one American Horror Story that's about, this is a spoiler, guys, for the most recent one. So fast forward if you haven't heard. But it's New York City, so you don't know what is happening. You know, it's like the 80s, and you're not really sure, but there's this guy with an axe who keeps going after these guys at clubs and like gay clubs, and you start to realize as the series goes on that it's not an actual monster. HIV, it's the AIDS crisis. But they've personified they've personified this as a monster, and he hides in the corners, and like if these two guys are kissing or something, he'll like hack one of them, and you start to realize as the show goes on, certain people get attacked.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, and this is actually an extremely common thing for horror, even if we look back into like Gothic literature and stuff like that. It was never meant to be just, and this is, I think, why, even though I like generally can't watch a lot of it because I'm just a scaredy cat, but like why I would also argue that some of that gory stuff is devoid of the depth that horror movies are. Because I think horror movies actually have a lot of depth and richness to them. They're not just about scaring you. But it goes back into those things of talking about certain aspects of humans, certain things like selfishness or greed or whatever, and kind of giving it the analogy of a monster to talk about the issue. This is, if you look at like vampire stories or even zombies, if you're looking at more of a Caribbean spirituality and studying what zombieism was for that culture, because it's not the like brain-eating zombies. It's a very different thing. And it's really fascinating to kind of look at what it means to be soulless as a human, and to have lost like the thing that makes you human and then become this zombie. And that's what those things were always doing. I think what horror movies, well-done horror movies, still do is give us insight into these kinds of areas of being human that
need. Yeah, and I think that's the best. Like, I agree. I think like my husband and I, for my birthday, just did, because I am the opposite of Christy. I like all things scary. I don't know why, we could dig into that, but we did an Edgar Allan Poe night, and I think he was kind of like what you were talking about. Is
yeah,
he's really good at that. You watch it, and you're not sure through some of it if it's a guilty conscience or if it's an actual like supernatural thing that's happening. Like,
yeah,
is a heart really pounding
under the floorboards? Yeah,
or is it just him feeling guilty because of what he did, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the sort of those sort of ones, I think, are the best, because you're just like as soon as there's a point in that a American Horror Story New York where I just was like, oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no. Yeah. And I said it to Stuart and he goes, oh no. Because this whole time we were just like, it's a monster. He can be killed.
Yeah. Well, and if you keep telling yourself it's a monster, then it's easy to not try to deal with it or to not look deeper at it. And that's, I think, the thing that horror movies are trying to get you to do, is to look deeper at a problem instead of just pretending that it doesn't exist or pretending that it's somewhere else. You know, you have to actually realize that the monster is in us.
That's
kind of coming out.
100%. And the things that we vilify, we really, I think, have to, because I find myself sometimes watching the news and just being like, oh my gosh, this person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's like, right, but what, you know, what's actually happening here?
What's that, because
it's not just one person that's dictating the whole of this situation.
No.
Like, leaders have power, don't get me wrong, but like, there are other people that have to support them.
Yep. Yep. A leader only has power if there's followers behind it. And there's also so much apathy when you decide that something is outside of our ability to deal with. When we make stuff a monster in that way, then we become very apathetic about dealing with it. And we just say, that's a problem we can't solve, so I'm not even going to try.
Right.
That, I think, is a huge problem. Like, we still have to try to fix things. We still have to like strive to be better.
I think that's what that whole political divide in America is right now. Is, I think, I mean, I'm on one side of it for sure, but I think the issue is not the side. You can think you're correct, but it's the easy way, because it's like, it's exactly what you said, is that if you pick a side, then you don't have to deal with the deeper. You can just be like, I hate them, and we're the better ones, and they're the monsters.
They're monsters. They're not like me. We don't have things in common. I would never be that way. I would never do those things. All of that kind of stuff comes up when we decide that that thing isn't human anymore.
But and, here's the deal. America's one big Camp Crystal Lake. And you know what? If these people would just, well, when they bond together, despite their differences.
Despite their differences. They could fight because Jason.
They can fight the monster.
Stupid person.
And I mean, not even that, really. And he's very slow. And you have canoes.
You have canoes. So. And, you know, you can gather things. Well, and, you know, you see it happen. Like, I did watch Midnight Mass, which I know we've mentioned before. I thought it was brilliant. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really, really good. And I really appreciated the ways that people realized how they could fight against what was going on. And then I also decided, because one of my friends, who I am going to call Catherine, lied to me.
Is it the real Catherine?
Catherine. Yes. Dear friend of mine, but I...
But a big old liar, that's fine.
I yelled at her. So I watched Midnight Mass on her recommendation, which normally she gives me great recommendations.
You just said you liked it.
Midnight Mass. But then she was like, you also need to watch The Haunting of Hill House. And I was like, is it scary? And she said, no, it's no worse than Midnight Mass. That is not true.
That is
a
lie. Probably not true. I would be.
Lie. That show is so much scarier.
It's a house too. I always think houses. There's a little bit more.
It was the bedneck lady. I could not sleep for a week. I was dying. I thought I was going to die. I could, every time I tried to go to bed, I was just like laying there thinking about the bedneck lady. But I do think.
She was really specific, though. You'd have to be really in that world for it.
But I do think that that show also really gets at what we're talking about, is that idea of, like, we are kind of perpetuating this cycle by not being able to look at our own problems, you know? Like, I can't think too hard about it or I'm not going to sleep tonight, but, like,
The Haunting of Hill House was written by Shirley Jackson, who we maybe talked about before, but no, I don't think we did actually. But she has a book that's an autobiography that's called maybe it's not written by her. I'm just going to say a biography, but it's called A Most Haunted Life. Yeah, she didn't write it. It's about her life. She didn't write a ton, but she was like really, she wrote that. But she was someone who struggled a lot in her life. And a lot of the stories you read, and if you read A Most Haunted Life, her husband was really abusive. He was like a professor who like slept with students and like basically held it over her head that he was this academic, and like and she had problems herself, and it was like you can, if you read that book, everything in Haunting of Hill House kind of makes a lot more and you once again realize that the horror is her life.
Yeah. She wrote The Lottery also.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Oh my gosh. You have to read it. It's so good. It's a short story.
And is it also about her sad life?
I mean, it is an indictment on a lot. It is super intense, and it's a pretty common English lit read. Okay. But it is very, very, I highly recommend reading The Lottery, but oh boy, the end is rough. And it's a brilliant horror story. It's written really well.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I think she'd be really pleased with how it turned out. When I read about her, I'm like, oh gosh.
Yeah. Well, and this often too is true of those writers, Edgar Allan Poe certainly didn't have the.
The whole Raven poem is like apparently about his wife he knew was gonna die, and and the Raven's just being like, nevermore, maybe I'll see her in another time. The Raven's like, nope,
you're not going to.
You're not going to. So, you know, he had stuff, and he like died like in a ditch somewhere or something, I think, like, you know,
he died. So, yeah, I mean, alcoholism. I mean, yeah. And wellness is other, like, there's so much going on with a lot of those writers, but like, they're really oftentimes talking about their own demons mm-hmm. and their own issues, which are almost every time just common things that people deal with, but we don't want to deal with them. So we pretend like it's not happening.
Agree.
But
you just made me love horror movies even more now that we're
on. Honestly, I mean, I support horror movies so much. I just can't do it.
I know. I think that's fair. I mean, there's a lot of, again, if we circle back, it's escapism for me.
Yeah.
For you, it's like
a
magnifying glass on the terrible.
All that said, I do really like all sorts of crime movies, and I have started this terrible habit of watching Lifetime original movies that are like about various women being murdered or abducted or something.
See, and I can't do that without getting nightmares.
We can find a therapist to talk about why this is a current obsession of mine, but it's been a thing that I've been doing too much.
I know. I think there's some stuff to unpack here. I never did ask you what your favorite horror film was.
Gosh, see, I don't even know if I could say because they're so devastating to me. Like, how do you say what your favorite experience?
Okay, what's the one that has hurt your soul the most? That you
the one that hurt my soul the most? Well, have you ever seen What Lies Beneath?
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. With Michelle Pfeiffer?
Yes.
Yeah.
And isn't it Harrison Ford? Is her
it
husband?
Is. Yep.
Yeah. Who yeah. Harrison Ford was one of my earliest crushes. Like Harrison Ford's Indiana Jones. I obsessively watched Indiana Jones when I was little.
Spoiler alert to What Lies Beneath.
I loved him so much.
And he will not be your favorite after it's
I went to see it when I.
From what I remember, he was not a good guy.
He was not a good guy. I went with two friends. One of them was a guy who, like, we were very close. And I remember sitting in that movie, and when you realize that Harrison Ford is the baddie, I just like looked at my friend Matt and I was like, I will never trust you again.
You have a lot of friends that are going on the non-trust pile here.
This was entirely not Matt's fault. He was a very nice guy.
Matt got off. Catherine did not.
Catherine is her fault. but
that was a good one though. That was a good one.
It was a good movie, but it was, oh my gosh.
That leaned itself a little into yield real life. So it was still a horror.
I also feel like I can't deal with foggy mirrors anymore because of that movie. Like,
I would say in general, foggy mirrors. If you've ever seen Candyman, any of them, which I'm assuming you haven't.
I have not seen Candyman, but the
there's a lot of foggy mirrors, and 10 out of 10 recommend don't wiping them off.
Yeah, no, I never will ever again in my life. I haven't wiped off a foggy mirror since whenever the year is that What Lies Beneath came out. Mm-hmm. It doesn't end well.
Because then you get scared and you die. You might as well just turn around and die. Like, right. And you're not frightened. Yeah.
I will say, I thought that The Sixth Sense was a good movie, even though it terrified me.
That one got you too.
That one.
There were a couple of scary moments in that, like what's her face from the OC in the tent.
That kid who shot himself in the back of the head. I nope.
Oh yeah.
I noped right out of that. I was like, I can't handle this anymore. Sorry,
spoilers, guys.
Although, I like Scream.
The Sixth Sense, if you haven't,
a million years old. People have seen it. Yeah. And I also did see Urban Legends.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That one's a good one. I like that one. That one sort of followed
in the same time period.
Yeah.
That was another movie that my high school friends tricked me into seeing.
But I also love, so talking about Urban Legend, what's cool in that movie is that it talks a little bit about this, but I also saw a documentary that I can't remember the name of, sorry. And it talked about a lot of the early horror stories that like went around orally were told or started by parents to like the lover's lane stuff, you know, what do you think of like actually, with the hook?
All I studied of that. This in college.
Yeah. Yeah. And the candy, the razor blades and the candy.
Yep.
There's no stories that relate to that except for one guy who tried to poison his own kids because he was going through a breakup or something, but there's no actual story.
There's no like mass. Yeah. Yeah. I took a class on folklore when I was in undergrad, and it was one of my favorite classes. We studied a whole bunch of different folklore, but when we got into folklore in the US, and it's a thing I tell my students currently, is that all of these stories that we tell aren't stories that we're trying to tell to mean that these exact events happened. We tell them because we're trying to pass along principles. So like Red Riding Hood is not a story that happened, but it's teaching your kids about stranger danger, right? So when we hear these urban legends growing up, it wasn't, the point never was that they really happened. The point was to teach you certain safety things or
the babysitter, the call's coming from inside the house.
The call's
coming. Well, girl, why aren't you checking them rooms?
Right. get out of that house.
Also, who has a landline these days?
What is happening?
We're gonna have to readjust that story.
It's a really interesting kind of thing that's been passed down for the entirety of the human race, is this is how we actually pass down information, is through story and not like just giving a bunch of bullet point lessons. So
for sure
you know, gets into a lot of other stories that we get a little too literal about, but that's for another time.
It is And if you haven't checked out The Monkey's Paw as a story, that's one.
Oh, that's a good one.
And also I will say Candyman, which I did, if you do like horror, that one has set New Orleans. It's got a lot of Civil War background to it. There is a whole lot to unpack.
I will also say that while I can't watch horror movies, I am a huge fan of like Gothic literature and stuff. And so there's like Monkey's Paw I've read as a story, but.
And it's a good one. Cause it's one of those sort of earlier things of like, the human condition and what makes us horrific as being
Dracula.
Human.
Dracula's a great book.
Super racist, right?
The Dracula thing. I mean, yes, and also a whole bunch of other things going on, but like
No, I mean she's the English lit person. I can talk about scream all day. I don't do English lit. I just remember somewhere telling me that like Dracula, because he was in Romania and there was a lot of like
it's racist, not in the ways that you think it usually is. It's very racist,
like immigrant phobic.
Romas, it's anti-immigrant and it's anti-Romas, but then also Mary Shelley's Frankenstein is a really, like, the book is really good.
I'm glad you kept talking because someone called me.
So. And not and not at all what we see depicted in the movies typically. But the book is fantastic and like so deep. And also the story about how it got written is just the best story. That she wrote it to like beat her husband and his friend in a contest.
Oh yeah. Yes.
That's amazing. But
I think there's a drunk history about that too.
There is, yeah.
So that's our recommendations for today, mostly drink history.
But for a short one, go read The Lottery by Shirley Jackson. It's a good, but horror is such a great genre.
I watch Bambi.
I'll do it as long as I'm not alone for like
and the last of us is definitely not This Is Us. I don't know if two shows could be more different, but
you said This Is Us and I was like, I don't think that's what we're talking about.
Mandy Moore just starts chasing zombies. It's epic.
Milo Ventimiglia, actually, when he died, he comes back. Terrorizes his family.
He's a zombie. I mean, if you saw him in the Gilmore Girls, not hard to imagine. Anyway, gonna stop there. Oh, I put my flag in the sand.
You know what? Your Gilmore Girls slander has become an issue.
Look, I watched it. I know it. I'm just saying.
Go on to our Instagram and convince Leah to watch One Tree Hill. It's
oh, yes. At Rescue, I saw something and I was like, everyone signed this with emotional quotes. I don't know what it means.
She texted me a picture and was like, where am I? And I was like, you're at the River Court. Oh, my God.
And I just kept going, what does that mean?
I was like, just watch the show. I had a really emotional moment and then a deep dive. I went to the bridge when we were out there for your birthday. I took Susie, our friend Susie, who sweet Susie has never seen it. And the bridge is absolutely covered in quotes from the show. Yeah. And she picks out this one and it is like probably the most important quote from the show. The most referenced, like any even nominal fan of One Tree Hill is going to know this quote. And she goes, look at this cheesy thing somebody wrote.
I mean, there was a lot of feeling happening on that court. So I will watch it though, because I need a late night show to watch. So
it's
I will
perfect late night show.
But it's Wilmington, by the way. If you're interested in Dawson's Creek, One Tree Hill,
they'll give you a tour guide. There was a bunch of other movies that were filmed there, but there's like
I know what you did last summer. Speaking of horror,
you can go visit all of the different famous scenes in Wilmington.
Yeah, I know what you did last summer, and then you can also go to the place that they filmed Empire Records.
Yeah.
And be very disappointed.
It was very disappointing.
Do not frame your trip around
that. Do not. In fact, probably don't go see it. Save yourself.
Yeah. Yes. Well, good. I'm going to go because someone's calling me about a kitten.
Oh, good. Get Oscar that home. And join us at Theology Beer Camp, everybody. And also next time.
See you later.
Bye.
Sleep well, Christy.